pitiable. Vakyam, words. Ashrutya, hearing. Saha, that. Nahi patahi, the king. Kalasya apsu, and the water contained in the water jug. Nitvaya, taking. Enam, the fish. Dayalu, merciful. Ninye, brought. Achamam, to his residence. So translation, the merciful king, being moved by the pitiable words of the fish, placed the fish in a water jug and brought him to his own residence. So you can repeat. The merciful king.
The merciful king.
Being moved by the pitiable words of the fish.
Being moved by the pitiable words of the fish.
Placed the fish in a water jug.
Placed the fish in a water jug.
And brought him to his own residence. So there's no purport to this text, nor the next many, many texts. So it's just one explanation, is that Krishna is actually engaging the king, Satyavrata, in devotional service. And sometimes it appears that Krishna is helpless. Just like we have the story of Mother Yashoda, she's taking care of Krishna. She's thinking that if I don't feed Krishna, if I don't take care of Krishna, he's going to die or get hurt or get sick. And also the gopis, they're getting worried that Krishna's wandering in the forest without shoes. He refuses to put shoes on because the cows don't also have shoes. And he's going to hurt his feet. So in this way, Krishna is actually drawing the affection of his devotees. So this is one of the reasons why he appears as a little fish, a little innocent fish. Okay, let's continue reading. Text 17. Satu tatraika ratrena vardamana kamandalu alavatma vakashamva idam ahamaki patim. But in one night, that fish grew so much that he could not move his body comfortably in the water of the pond. He then spoke to the king as follows. Text 18. Naham kamanda lalvasmin krishram vastum mihotsahi kapaya kasavi pulam yatraham nivasei sukham. My dear king, I do not like living in this water pot with such great difficulty. Therefore, please find some better reservoir of water where I can live comfortably. Text 19. Sahinam tataha doiha yadho datan chanodke tatra chipta mahurtena astatrayam avardata. Then taking the fish out of the water pot, the king threw him in a large well, but within a moment the fish developed to the length of 3 cubits. Whew, what a fish. Text 20. Nama itadaham rajam sukam vastum utanchanam ritudehi patam maiham yatvaham sharanangatha. The fish then said, "My dear king, this reservoir of water is not fit for my happy residence. Please give me a more extensive pool of water, for I have taken shelter of you." So text 21. Atatadaya saratya ashipta rajan sarovare taravrityatmana soyam mahamino anavardata. Omarash predicted the king took the fish from the well and threw him into the lake. But the fish then assumed a gigantic form, exceeding the extent of the water. Text 22. Naitanme swastihi rajan udakam salilokasaha nidehi raksha yogena raddevam avidasane. The fish then said, O king, I am a large aquatic, and this water is not at all suitable for me. Now kindly find some way to save me. It would be better to put me in the water of a lake that will never reduce. Text 23. Ityuktaso nayan matsyang tatra tatra vidasane jalasehe samittam tam samudre prakshipas jasham. When thus requested, King Satyabrata took the fish to the largest reservoir of water. But when that also proved insufficient, the king at last threw the gigantic fish into the ocean. Text 24. Shipya manas tamahi nang ihamam makaradayaha adanchati valavira mamne hot shrashtum harasi. While being thrown in the ocean, the fish said to King Satyabrata, O hero, in this water there are very powerful and dangerous sharks that will eat me. Therefore, you should not throw me in this place. Text 25. Evam vimohitas tena varata vadubharatim tamahako bhavanasman matsyarupena mo. After hearing these sweet words from the Supreme Personality of God in the form of a fish, the king, bewildered, asked him, Who are you, sir? You simply bewilder us. Text 26. Naivam virya jalacharu thristos nabhi shutopiva Yo bhavan yojana shatang adna vivarna shesaraha. My lord, in one day you have expanded yourself for hundreds of miles, covering the water of the river and the ocean. Before this, I had never seen or heard of such an aquatic animal. Text 27. Nunam twang bhagavan sakshat Dadir Narayano Vyaha Anugrahaya Bhutanam Datse Rupam Jalakasam. My lord, you are certainly the inexhaustible Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayan Shihari. It is to show your mercy to the living entities that you have now assumed the form of an aquatic. Text 28. Namaste purusha shrishta stityut pachyapya yeshvara vaktanam na prapananam mukyo yatma gatir vivo. O my lord, master of creation, maintenance, and annihilation, O best of enjoyers, Lord Vishnu, you are the leader and destination of surrendered devotees like us. Therefore, let me offer my respectful obeisances unto you. Text 29. Sarve lila vataraste bhutanam bhuti hetavaha dvatum icham yato rupam yadartham bhavatadritam. All your pastimes and incarnations certainly appear for the welfare of all living entities. Therefore, my lord, I wish to know the purpose for which you have assumed this form of a fish. Nate ravindaksha padopasarpanam Vishabhavit sarva surit priyatmanaha yateteresham pritagatmanam satam adidrsho yat vapurat bhutam hinaha. So translation, and here we have a nice sized purport. O my Lord, possessing eyes like the petals of a lotus, the worship of the demigods who are in the bodily concept of life is fruitless in all respects. But because you are the supreme friend and dearmost supersoul of everyone, worship of your lotus feet is never useless. You have therefore manifested your form as a fish. So purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. The demigods like Indra, Chandra, and Surya are ordinary living entities who are differentiated parts and parcels of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Lord expands Himself through the living beings, Nityo, Nityanam, Chaitanas, Chaitananam. His personal Vishnu-tattva forms, which are all spiritual, are called Swamsa, and the living entities who are differentiated parts are called Vibhinamsa. Some of the Vibhinamsa forms are spiritual, and some are a combination of matter and spirit. The conditioned souls in the material world are different from their external bodies made of material energy. Thus, the demigods living in the upper planetary systems and the living entities living in the lower planetary system are of the same nature. Nonetheless, those living as human beings on this planet are sometimes attracted to worshiping the demigods in the higher planetary systems. Such worship is temporary, as the human beings on this planet have to change their bodies. The living entities known as Indra, Chandra, Varuna, and so on will also have to change their bodies in due course of time. As stated in Bhagavad Gita, men of small intelligence worship the demigods and their fruits are limited and temporary. Those who do not know the position of the demigods are inclined to worship the demigods for some material purpose. But the results of such worship are never permanent. Consequently, here it is said, in other words, if one is to worship someone else, he must worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Then his worship will never be fruitless. Even a slight attempt to worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead is a permanent asset. Therefore, as recommended in Srimad Bhagavatam, Taptva Sadharmam Charanam Bhujam Hare, one should take to the worship of the lotus feet of Hari, even if this means giving up the so-called occupational duty assigned because of the particular body one has accepted. Because worship in terms of the body is temporary, it does not bear any permanent fruit. But worship of the Supreme Personality of Godhead gives immense benefit. Om Gana Timadanda Shah Gananjana Shilakaya Chatsur and Meditam Yena Tasmai Shigurabed Maha. So here Prabhupada is indirectly contrasting the bodies of the living entities, including the demigods, with the body of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, has exhibited his fish body, or actually his original spiritual body in a fish form, in so many different ways that it's apparent to Satyavrata that it's not a material body. And as we've described before, the body of the Supreme Lord is Jopi Samaniya Uttanam Mishvopi Samdhatam Swamadistaya Samabhamaya Bhamaya. It's original. It's no difference between him and his body, no difference between his mind and his body, no difference between his personality and his body, no difference between his desires and his body. He is non-dual. With us, there's so much difference between our mind and our physical body, our gross physical body, our desires in our body, and our activities in our body, our emotions in our body, but with the Lord, it's non-different. So when the Lord feels a certain way, then he actually manifests himself in such a way, the physical, not the physical, but the body manifests itself in such a way because his consciousness, his desires, his mood is not different from his body. And I'll explain what I mean by certain examples. Let's take the example of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who was exhibiting symptoms of ecstasy in Jagannath Puri. When Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was exhibiting symptoms of ecstasy, it's described that sometimes his arms would become so much elongated to many cubits. I guess a cubit is generally understood, I think, from here to here. So from the fingertips to the elbow. And so his arms were extended for many cubits. And when the devotees chanted Hare Krishna, I mean, it's impossible. I mean, if your body, if your arms are actually extended that long, you're not going to get it back together again. Not going to work. And so that means you're dislocated, your arms. Actually, one time when my father was playing with me, I was young, and he was swinging me around my arm became dislocated. And it's not that by chanting Hare Krishna, everything worked out all right. I had to go to the doctor and everything and take care of it. So anyway, so Lord Chaitanya's arm was so much elongated. And then the devotees, he was at the, he was where the cows were eating the, cows from Tailinga were eating the rejected grains and everything like that. And the devotees chanting Hare Krishna came back. And other times his arms came into his body like a tortoise. And then the devotees chanted Hare Krishna and the arms came out again. I mean, this is definitely a spiritual body. And not only that, we worship Lord Jagannath. And who is Lord Jagannath? Of course, many times we hear the explanation of the unfinished deities. That Vishvakarma, actually there's two versions of the story. Either Vishvakarma was carving the deities, and sometimes it's described the Lord himself became the carver of the deities. Two different stories and two different Puranas. So anyway, so we hear the story about the unfinished deities of Lord Jagannath, and that's why he looks the way he does. But actually, the reason Lord Jagannath looks the way he does is because Krishna actually looks like that when he's experiencing separation from the residents of Vrindavan. I mean, there's the stories that we usually tell during the Rath Yatra. How Krishna overheard the devotees discussing about his pastimes in Vrindavan. There was Rohini, who was Balaram's mother, and she was talking to Krishna's wives about Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan. And of course, the story goes that Subhadra, she was guarding this room, and Subhadra overheard what was happening, and then she became in so much ecstasy that her arms basically disappeared, and she looks like the Subhadra deity that we have. And then along comes Balaram, and a similar thing happened to him, and his eyes were wide, and then along comes Jagannath, or Krishna, and a similar thing happens to him. And he looks like that. He looks exactly like the deities. There's many stories, not only the Jagannath story, there's many stories how the Lord's body like changes. I mean, there's another story when Lord Chaitanya accepted Jagai and Madai, and his body became completely black. And the devotees were staring at Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, what do you see? What do I look like? And everybody said, you look like Krishna. Because his body became completely black. So anyway, so the Lord's body just manifests itself differently according to his mood. I mean, our body, there's a certain limitation. Of course, if you can read someone's facial expressions, you can basically understand what's happening in their mind. That's true. I mean, there's a certain limitation. There's a certain amount where the body is mutable. Like that, and expert poker players know how to read. I was just reading about someone who was an expert, you know, at poker? Anyway, whatever. Card player. For purpose of this, and he doesn't know what poker is. He thinks it's a dance. So expert card players, they can read someone's facial motions and understand what cards they have in their deck. So you learn this, you can go to Las Vegas and make a lot of money for Krishna. So anyway, so yes, there is some facial difference or some physical signs of someone's emotional state. But Krishna's emotional state, Krishna's mental state, Krishna's desires manifest in his transcendental body. And that's how Satyavrata is able to identify that he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Just like we have, Prabhupada also gives the example sometimes that people declare themselves to be God, and we ask them to manifest some particular miracle they happen to be. If they're God, we say, you know, lift Govardhan Hill, or just fly in the air for a few moments to display that you're God. But so this is Krishna's transcendental position. Prabhupada here mentions that in spite of all this evidence that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of God, and that by worshipping Krishna, one can achieve eternal happiness, people still are inclined to worship these demigods. And of course, those who are interested in those in the mode of goodness, of course, worship demigods. Those in the mode of passion worship the demons, and those in the mode of ignorance worship the ghosts and spirits. So, of course, when we talk about people in the mode of goodness, it doesn't mean they're purely in the mode of goodness. They're purely in the mode of goodness, they wouldn't worship the demigods. But they worship the demigods, because of this kama, because of this lust. So in spite of all this information in the Vedic literatures, and the Vedic literatures are really clear about who's the Supreme Personality of God, and either through the stories or the philosophy given in the Vedic literatures, people have their intelligence stolen by these desires for immediate sense gratification. And they act in such ways, when nunam pramata kurute vikarma, yadendriya purite apranoti. Because nunam pramata kurute vikarma, this is actually a description by Rishabhadeva in the fifth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, that because yadendriya purite apranoti, they're so attached to sense gratification. Yadindriya pritya, just like you have this priya or pritya. So indriya pritya means they consider their senses so dear. Nunam pramata. They act in ways that are basically not intelligent. Like Prabhupada describes this word. Sometimes he says mada means mad. It actually means illusioned. And pramada means still more illusioned. So they act in such ways that are counterproductive to their ultimate spiritual happiness, because their senses are pulling them here and there. Yad indriya pritya apranoti. So, therefore, people in India worship demigods. Of course, people in the West don't worship demigods generally. This is an Indian thing. People in the West, you know, they worship rich people or whatever. Or their bosses at work, so they'll have a higher position. So the whole point is to control the senses, not to consider the satisfaction of the senses as significant, which is a real challenge for us. You know, whether we're Indians, whether we're Americans, how can we focus, as it said in the Bhagavad Gita, Bhogeshvarya Prasaktanam Tayaya Pratichetasam, Yogasayatmaga Buddhya Pramado Navatiyate. That as long as we consider the sense gratification, Yoboga and Aishvarya, Boga means actually to accept something, Boga, that is not offered to Krishna, sense gratification, basically. Boga Aishvarya, if we're interested in this Boga and Aishvarya, sense gratification, Prasaktanam, we're attached to it. Tayaya Pratichetasam, and our mind is such absorbed in such a way. Then Krishna says, second chapter of Gita, Samadhu Navatiyate, that we can never be absorbed in Krishna consciousness. We may not go to worship of the demigods, but we'll be approaching so many other sense objects or people who can satisfy our senses. And so the whole idea is to give up this boga and aishvarya, this desire for boga and aishvarya, opulent sense gratification. How to do that? It's very hard. It's very hard. Especially as it says in Bengali, the tongue is the most voracious of all senses. And actually the statement is that if one can conquer the tongue, one can conquer the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So how to do that? Very difficult. The only way I know of doing it is to be absorbed 24 hours a day in Krishna's service. So much so that even when you're not doing something for Krishna, you're planning on how to do something. So much so that you have so much service for Krishna to perform that at night you're thinking about how to do that service. And that's Brahmarpanam, Brahmana, Brahmarpanam, Brahmana, Brahmagno, Brahmana, Tam. Brahma tena gantavyam, Brahma karma samadhinam. And that statement there in the Gita, that one should be so much absorbed in work for Brahma karma, for Krishna, that basically that work is spiritualized and your whole consciousness becomes spiritualized and then you don't even notice the pushings and pullings of your senses. So anyway, so those are some of the points we can get from this verse, purport, and this wonderful description of the Lord's manifestation of his body, his transcendental body. So any questions or comments?
Yes.
Yes, questions we have. Who? Eeny, meeny, miny, mo. Pick a devotee by the microphone.
Yes. The question is question and comment.
Yeah.
In the Catholic Church, there are so many saints, and so they take the place of the demigods in the sense that the Catholics pray to so and so, Saint Joseph or Saint Rita or Saint Agatha or something, for different benefits. So that's there. And I forget the question.
Yeah, but actually, we can pray to the demigods for Krishna service, like the gopis prayed to Kachiyani. And I actually have on my altar a deity of Lord Shiva. And I pray to him for devotional service, and I pray to Hanuman for all sorts of things. So there's a proper way to approach even the demigods, because the demigods are devotees. We have that offense on chanting Hare Krishna, one should not consider the names of the demigods of equal put to or independent of the holy name of Lord Vishnu. Some of the acharyas explain part of that offense is being one should not offend the demigods. So in Christianity, let's get back to your question about Christianity, you have all these great saints, and I'm not going to question whether they're saints or whether or not, let's accept theoretically they're saints, you know, great pure devotees of the Lord. So would they be happy if someone prays to them for material benefit? I don't think so. I mean, let's say, you know, Prabhupada. Prabhupada's a great saint. Okay, let's take in our particular line. Prabhupada's a great saint. So, if I were to approach Prabhupada, and not me, of course, someone else, anyway. So if someone were to approach Prabhupada and said, Prabhupada, please make this business deal successful. What do you think Prabhupada would say? Any questions? Any answer to that? Yeah, he said, your real business is that it's up to Krishna. I think I would probably get chastised, especially with sannyasi, going to Prabhupada and asking Prabhupada to pray for me for that particular benediction. Although Krishna does say in the Gita, in the Bhagavatam, akama sarva karma moksha kama dharadita vrena bhakti yogini yajeta purusham param. Whether one is free of material desires, full of material desires, or desires of liberation, one should enthusiastically approach Krishna for those things. So we don't discourage people, because by coming in contact with Krishna, they get purified anyway. Like we have the story of Dhruva Maharaj, and there's other stories in the Vedic literatures, but of course the story of Dhruva Maharaj is actually the most appropriate in this regard, where Dhruva Maharaj was approaching Narayan before a kingdom greater than that of Lord Brahma, and then he became purified. So we don't want to heavy people out about this, but approach Krishna, not the demigods. Now, I don't want to equate the saints with the demigods either, because these many Christian saints were pure devotees. The demigods, generally, they're sadkama devotees. So I don't know if the connection is actually there. Yeah.
As far as my experience goes, when people pray to the different saints are assigned to have some ability to bless with.
In different ways.
It's material, so material.
Yes, it's just mundane. Just mundane. Of course, the only saint I pray to is Saint Nicholas. You know who Saint Nicholas is?
Yeah,
Santa Claus.
I
do pray to him every year around December, in the middle of December, so.
Santa Claus.
Yeah.
Prabhupada used the, like you said, term, the order supply of God.
Yeah.
And it seems that people don't know any more than, you know, God can supply good health, wealth, etc. And people think that's going to make them happy.
Right.
So how do we? I mean, we come up with them and say, "Oh, you won't be made happy." But it's, no, I will be made happy. If I have good health, I'll be happy. Or you, this money won't make you happy. Oh, I will be happy. If I have money, I will buy it to be happy. And then we say something like, "You, if you just serve God, you'll be happy, and you'll get so much benefit." And they say, "Well, prove it to me." So what is our
Yeah, there's two parts to your question. One is to prove it, and the other one is how to approach people. Krishna says one should not disturb the mind of those who are materially attached, but encourage them to work in a spirit of devotion. So if we find someone really attached, then we don't try to smash it out of them and say, you know, you're not going to be happy by getting this. We could say that to them, but, you know, if they're not accepting it, okay, just chant Hare Krishna. And you'd be happy. Add this, like Prabhupada would often say when approaching people, don't have to change anything. Don't change your life. Just add this to your life. So that's the first point. So we don't really want to go there. So in other words, and then the second question, how do you prove to them that chanting Hare Krishna and being a devotee is makes you happy? Well, we have to show by our own example. I mean, they have to come to the temple instead of finding people, you know, fighting with each other, you know, going on the internet and criticizing each other. You know, because you go on the internet, you Google, that's a new word, you Google Hare Krishna, and then you'll find all the conflicts that are there, you know, between the devotees. Well, I'm horrific. Well, I'm a whatever. You know, this moth. And, you know, criticizing each other. Well, these people don't seem too happy to me. So at least, where they come to the temple and find everybody crying. Not in ecstasy, you know. Crying. Oh, I can't stand it. So I think to prove that Krishna consciousness makes you happy, we have to be happy. You know, and actually, like Prabhupada said, example is better than precept. So many of us in the early days joined because they saw Prabhupada. Prabhupada was, of course, not only happy, but transcendental and full of compassion. So they have to see examples of people who they want to be like, you know, role models. I think really that's what convinces people. I mean, before I joined the movement, I had Prabhupada as a role model, of course. And then, you know, I have to be honest, you know, though people may hate me for this, Kridananda Maharaj was a role model too. He was married at that time. It's not that his being married was a role model, but he was so enthusiastic. I remember before I moved in the temple, I went on one preaching engagement with him, he was just like bubbling over with enthusiasm. Confirmed. Hope he's listening. So, because I didn't ask him for a loan today. So the example has to be there. That's how we prove. I mean, sometimes you go, just on the other hand, you go in Eastern Europe and you go to these Orthodox